for Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, you're listening to the Tank Slappers podcast. And on this week's show, we're going to be discussing everything that happened at a very hectic, dramatic, historic America's Grand Prix from the Circuit of the Americas. And to do that, as ever, joining me, Lewis Duncan, is Oriol Puigdemont. Not far off the plane from Austin, still a bit jet lagged, but a good weekend overall, Yuri.
Hello, yes, I wouldn't say a bit, I would say I'm completely, knocked out by the jet lag, but yeah, I'll do my best in order to try to be, as understandable as possible.
Well, you do a great job every time. Not even jet lag will keep you down. To be fair, these even working from home, those Austin shifts are horrible, it's rubbish times. But anyway, it's good to have MotoGP in America, and I think this weekend, was a good weekend to have MotoGP in America, given the Liberty news. You know, there was a lot of, it seemed like there was a lot more hype around this race, and it delivered in spades. We had a fantastic Grand Prix, of course, won by Maverick Vinales, and we'll start with the man of the moment, really, Yuri, because we've spoken a lot about Maverick over the past 2 or 3 years in this podcast, and I think the consensus has been that Vinales, without a doubt, a quick rider, but, you know, just there's just something missing. And this weekend was perfect, you know, sprint win, pole position, Grand Prix, the way he rode that Grand Prix after dropping to 11th on lap one to then come back and be dominant. Like, this was Maverick at his very, very best.
I would say that it was a perfect story for Liberty people to find out what they are just about to buy. So now they know the potential that this new property has for them. And regarding Maverick, what else? I mean, what else can I say? I mean, it was pretty obvious that it was, I would say, his best performance in MotoGP, because, he won a race with Suzuki, he won races with Yamaha, but I would say that the dominance that he's shown in this Grand Prix, especially at that times that we are having now in MotoGP, with everything so tight, I think it was amazing. Again, another race, Maverick on top. Doesn't matter if he finishes first, second, third, but he's there. And I really hope that he can be there the rest of the season. In that case, I think the championship will enter in a different dimension, with Martin being there, Acosta being there, Maverick being there, Marquez being there eventually. So, I think let's get ready for the best.
You asked a fantastic question to Maverick on Saturday, I think it was, after he won the sprint. You said to him, you look happier, you know, than the same that you looked when you were early season in 2017 when he first moved to Yamaha. And he said to you, I wish I felt as good then. You know, that to me was a really, really good answer, because we've got a Maverick that this isn't a Maverick who has sat there for the past year and gone, oh, you know, yes, I am quick. If we have this, if we have that, if we have this. This was a Maverick who was just quick. He was perfect. He had the best bike under him for that weekend, and he delivered perfectly.
Well, don't forget that less than 3 years ago, he was about to retire after that Grand Prix in the Red Bull Ring when Yamaha decided to fire him. So, I mean, we have a super fast, probably the fastest version of Maverick Vinales, but with huge experience, not only on the racing side, but also life, becoming father. I mean, it's been a hell of a ride for him, a hell of a journey for him, until getting back into the top. And the other day after the race, he was, nobody really understands what I've been going through. I mean, only my family, waking up every morning, going into the training with the motivation being a bit low, but I didn't give up. I was there training, putting everything. He's lost weight. He's lost 4 kilos of weight this year. And the other day he says, yeah, we can. I mean, I think it's a really beautiful message to everybody to say hard work pays off in the end. So don't give up. Let's keep focus on follow your dreams, work hard, then yeah, eventually it will pay off in one way or the other.
Yeah, and I think as well credit has to go to Aprilia for sticking by Maverick. And you know, they always said we believe in Maverick, we think he's got great potential, and even when the results weren't there and you know Aleix was winning races and Maverick wasn't, they were still like, you know what, Maverick's our guy. We can, you know, we know he can do good things. And I guess you could argue that Aprilia had more time than maybe Yamaha did to have that patience, because they were a bike, you know, coming up. You know, it wasn't a bike that was at the top winning straight away, where top riders were coming after it all the time. But it has been a good package for a couple of years, and Aprilia could have gone in a different direction, and they've been really rewarded for that.
Yeah, but not only that, I think it's the harmony that they have created around Maverick, the human team that they have built up around Maverick, with Manu Cazó, his crew chief in Suzuki, with also Francesco Venturato, many different people that he knew from his time in Suzuki. Aprilia has built a really stable and well-known a family around him on track. So it makes a huge difference on Maverick's performance. And especially not only on track, but also his emotional stability. He's a rider that he needs to feel the love from people around him. I'm not saying that the others don't, but there are riders that need this more than others, and Maverick is one of those. Then he really needs to stay stable and yeah, trusting the people around him. And Aprilia has created this atmosphere where he can just focus on show his potential, that it's been proven that is amazing, outstanding. So, and as you mentioned, we cannot forget about the bike. I mean, it's not possible to put that performance both Saturday and Sunday without a really good bike. I also spoke with Aleix straight after the race, and he told me, I asked him, what else can you ask Aprilia? I say, nothing. He said, nothing. I mean, the bike is there. And it's good that in some tracks I'm a bit faster than Maverick, but in Portimao and here, he's shown that the bike is probably one of the best of the grids, or the best. So I think Ducati has found a serious challenger for this year, and probably for the next 2 years.
Yeah, it's a good point you make there, because you know the last non-Ducati win before last weekend was, of course, Aleix in Barcelona. But that was kind of a unique circumstance. You know, the bike really works well around Barcelona. Aleix really goes fast around there. And, you know, there was a lot of problems for Ducati riders that weekend. Bastianini had his accident. Bagnaia had his accident. This was an altogether different kind of win for Aprilia, you know, on a track where Ducati was really quick before and has been quick. And obviously Martin was very quick until kind of qualifying. You know, to see Ducati get beat down like that, you know, was... You know, and it wasn't just the Aprilia as well. Of course, Acosta on the KTM was quicker than the Ducati, but this must be a real alarm bells sort of moment for Ducati, that perhaps, you know, they've been looking at, you know, their riders, they've been looking at maybe Acosta, but, you know, Maverick now on that Aprilia must be a real danger man for them.
Well, yes, I think Ducati, what they need to fix first is those chattering problems, because it makes They make the rider's life more difficult. And at the moment where we live in a moment in which Aprilia has made a huge step, KTM or GasGas with Pedro Acosta is there, and he will probably want to race sooner than later. So I think Ducati needs to hold tight and try to solve those problems of chattering that have become the a nightmare for most of the riders. So they have the problem inside, and they need to fix it. So otherwise, it will be a serious problem, because at some point, don't forget that we are still, we only have seen 3 Grand Prix in the year. So all the championship the season is super long. And I think that Aprilia and especially GasGas with Acosta are there to stay. So I think I'm convinced that Ducati is mainly focused on solving that chattering problems.
Mm. Yeah, it's a bit of a weird problem, because it seems to affect all of them, but at different times. You know, Martin and Pecco really badly at the weekend. Bastianini was fine. I think he said it wasn't such a big problem for him. Mark's main issue on the Gresini bike was the front brakes, wasn't the chatter problems. I think that must be the worrying thing for Ducati, is that it's a consistent problem, but it's not consistent in the way that it happens. It's very much one weekend it's fine, one race it's fine. It's even from day to day it changes.
Yeah, well, it's probably related to which kind of tire they are using. So with the softer tires, the problem is it's more obvious. But yeah, they definitely are going to need to fix it. Otherwise, this 21 points gap, if I'm not wrong, that Martin has at the top of the standings, will be less and less in the next in the next races, because he is the one complaining the most about this problem. So yeah, I think we have the perfect season for the fans. Let's see.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we've had 3 great rounds already, and usually when we come to Austin anyway, it's generally a bit of a boring race. So we kind of, it's definitely been a lot more interesting. Speaking of Martin, you know, yes, he had those problems, but we spoke about this last week, that the maturity of Martin really has brought him to another level. And I think maybe last year with the issues he had, you know, this weekend, he might not have handled it in such a good way. But, you know, he came away with the podium in the sprint, just missed the podium in the Grand Prix, and still has a decent championship lead. You know, he's remaining calm despite this quite serious problem that Ducati have got.
I think he's doing what he needs to do, and what everybody is expecting from him. I mean, he's made another step this year, a difficult year because of this, precisely with these chattering problems. And I think he's making the most of the whole situation, and creating this gap is huge after three rounds. So I think he has understood than being, performing like he did in Austin in a bad weekend, that's a title that gives him a really good chances for fighting for the title at the end of the year.
I'll say something controversial here. I think Martin is maybe behaving more like a reigning world champion right now than Pecco is, in terms of, you know, trying to get the best out of a weekend, because, you know, yes, there was a crash in Portugal, but Pecco wasn't great there after that mistake in the sprint as well, while he was comfortably in the lead. And then this weekend in Austin just wasn't really very competitive. And, you know, he's only 30 points off in the championship right now, and it's a long season, but it just, the Pecco that we were expecting after Qatar hasn't really kind of come forward.
Yeah, especially that he was not consistently fast. So I think that's the main problem for him. He's convinced that Ducati will solve that problems and that they will come back stronger and that they will beat everybody else. That's what he said straight after the race. But I think it's more like, I don't know how to say, an emotional message, trying to, you know, to keep the people sharp than than the reality. I think they are worried.
Yeah, 100%. Just before we move on, we'll circle back to Maverick because I'd just like to make, speak a couple minutes more about him. I think you know Maverick quite well, and you've seen, you've followed every step of his career, and he's an enigma, I think would be the safe way to put it. For someone so fast, his win record is not brilliant in MotoGP. I actually think percentage wise overall, the Grand Prix he's competed in, he has a 6.1% win rate, which for a rider as good as Maverick isn't good enough. Do you think now, after what you've seen over the past couple of weekends, that the true Maverick Vinales is here to stay? The Maverick that we all thought we got in 2017 is it?
Well, we had Alberto Gomez had the chance to speak with Manu Kasoft straight after the race, and there was one sentence that I think it's very significant, which is, we are trying to let him know that the bad situations doesn't look as bad. So you cannot let these bad results that for sure will come letting you down. So, even a bad result, you can take some positives from it, you can learn, and then you have to try to make the most of the good results in terms of points. But there are a lot of lessons that you can take from a bad weekend, and trying to minimize the impact on your not only understandings but also on your mental side. So I hope that this stability that Mavericks show at the moment will be in, let's say, that window for the rest of the year, and that he won't drop as he eventually did on the past. And that's what Aprilia is trying to do with him, by talking, by giving him this stability and this harmony that he really needs.
Yeah, 100%. Let's talk about Marquez, because we all kind of, at one stage in that Grand Prix, it looked like, history was going to repeat itself. Mark hit the lead and we thought, okay, here we go. But it obviously didn't work out that way. He had a crash, he had a front brake problem. How do you kind of look at Mark's weekend? Because overall, front row, podium in the sprint, he was very competitive all the time. But it did seem in that Grand Prix that, he was pushing a little bit, maybe over the limit sometime, a couple of bits of contact with Miller, with Martin. We know that maybe the front brake problem contributed a little bit, but how did you see Mark's weekend?
Well, I think that this year he was looking for answers, and he got answers, especially in Austin. He's fast, he's competitive again. But of course, there is this issue with the brakes. He told us that it's not new, that he had it also in the pre-season in Sepang. I don't know if it's temperature related or something, but there's another thing that you need to try to analyze and to get an answer from those problems. Otherwise, the message is a bit worrying, because having problems with the braking, with the brakes, is not a good thing in a MotoGP bike. So I think that somebody needs to say something about these kind of problems, because otherwise they will probably spread the wrong message. So I think it's more about feeling than a proper, you know, technical issue, because I mean, it's pretty clear all of them use the same kind of Brembo brakes, and I'm sure that Brembo makes best brakes in the world. So yeah, I'm just curious to see which kind of information they give us. But 100%, I mean, he had problems. I'm sure he had problems. And let's see if they can fix from that, because if you have problems with chattering, with vibrations, and then you also have problems with the brakes, I think it's difficult. It's something difficult to face on a race weekend.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you have to wonder as well how much of Mark's problem is down to obviously his riding style, the way he brakes. Obviously, he's for 11 years. The way to make up the time on the Honda was to push hard into the corners. You know, for the Ducati is obviously a strong bike on the brakes, but you wonder as well just how much of the problem he is creating just by the way he rides that bike, and that they need to maybe just adapt it a little bit more to kind of compensate for that, because I suspect that Gresini Ducati wasn't ridden as hard as Mark has ridden it at any point last year.
Yeah, well, that's another point here. Don't forget that Gresini is an independent team, is a private team, so I'm not sure if like being in a factory or a factory supported team or factory team, even a factory team, the amount of people working on that bike and analyzing the data would have any impact on the outcome. And it would be easier for them to fix that specific issue. But yeah, I mean, I think, I don't think there's any, let's say, I don't know, but because that would be worrying, but I don't think there is any, I don't have the feeling that there is any, let's say, a technical problem on the brakes. I would say that probably it's the way probably they, I mean, with the resources that they have, I don't know. I'm just curious to see what they say, because it would be pretty obvious when you have a problem with a brace, and I'm not saying that he didn't have that problem. I'm convinced that, because he's always been very honest. When he makes a mistake, he's the first one to say, I'm sorry about that. It was my fault. But at this time, he also was very clear and something was going on. So I'm just curious to see what's the final explanation.
Yeah, I think 100%. You kind of look at the crash itself, and it was a bit odd, you know, the way he came into turn 11 with quite a lot of speed, but the way the front tucked on him was, yeah, very, very kind of strange. So I don't think that was kind of rider error, but I guess, you know, the Jerez test, we've been looking at it for Honda and Yamaha has been very important, but the Jerez test now seems like it's really important for Ducati for a number of reasons.
Yeah. I think, I mean, for all of them will be super, super important. I think that Yamaha will test finally this new engine. I think that Cal is testing this week also. He will probably test this new engine, and also probably Honda will bring something radically new, radically different, because they need to move. With Ducati, I think would be more focused on fixing these problems, because I mean, in terms of pure speed, the bike is super fast. So
yeah, you mentioned Honda there. I think if we're kind of analyzing Honda's season as a whole so far, America was probably the lowest point. I don't think I've heard Honda riders sound so miserable, you know, in a long time. Joan Mir said on Friday that Honda has gone in the wrong direction with the bike, and you asked him about it, and he said the most important thing is that Honda takes responsibility for this and moves on, which that's a big statement for a rider to say, you know.
But I think it's something really, really clear. I mean, Quartararo has been being so even louder than and more clear than what Mir has said the other day. Again, I think Honda needs to take responsibility of this. And by not changing the approach, they haven't. They haven't. I mean, they don't want to change the approach, okay, because they are so, arrogant or I don't know what's the problem. But that's for sure. I mean, and one, you can speak off the record with all the people inside Honda and then say, we are desperate. We are so frustrated because, I mean, with Honda, I'm lost in words. I mean, I don't have more explanation other than that. The brand wants to lose.
It seems, I don't think that's an unfair statement, because Honda comes into the Valencia test with a new bike and everyone's like, oh, it's great. And then it comes into the new season and it's like, it's almost as if they just thought, oh, we've got the perfect bike now. We don't need to do anything. And they have these concessions and they've not been using them. And it's, you know, it's one thing to have Stefan Bradl testing the bike. Stefan's a great test rider, but you need to get tests set up where you're,
but the communication
is a big
problem inside there, inside, outside. I mean, they don't, the new board, the new Japanese people in charge, they don't even speak English. I mean, they bring many different engineers, but they don't communicate with the team. They don't, they rarely speak English. So they don't know how to communicate themselves. And if you put that plus the different mentality, the different philosophy, the different culture. So you need to make an effort to try to, I mean, don't forget that you are racing in a, let's say, I wouldn't say European, but the laws, the sportive laws that are in place in that championship are, at the moment, mainly European. You need to make an effort to adapt yourself. No, they don't want to adapt. Yamaha, at least, they are trying to do some stuff. They are changing. They are making steps in different directions. So they are demonstrating, they are showing that they want to progress. Honda is doing exactly the same things for the last, I don't know. We were talking with a rider, and then they say, yes, yeah, since, I mean, they have just won because of the riders. I mean, because they had, I mean, since 2000 and I think that what they say is that the last outstanding bike was the one that their C211, the one with that in which Nicky won the title in 2006. Other than that, it was because they had Casey and they had Mark.
Yeah, and Danny as well. You know, had luck gone about his way. The champions, so, like they've always had good riders. Yeah, there's something. This is a good point, because you did an interview with Mark and he spoke about Fabio at the weekend, and he said that. He said a line that he said quite a lot, and it frustrates me a little bit, because he said, you know, Yamaha and Honda, they're Yamaha and Honda, they will be competitive again. And I think that's kind of why. Why will they be competitive again? Just because they've had success in the past, that means nothing. I think it's such
No, especially they will be competitive again if they are brave enough to change the approach. I mean, I think the problem is the approach that they have into the regulation, looking at the regulation. So everybody says, no, because in 2027, when they change the rules, they take off all the aero, they reduce the engine, and so it will be much easier for the Japanese. Well,
look at what happened with the RC212V. That bike was rubbish to begin with.
I mean, they can, if I have to say something, I would say no, because it's not a problem of those specific regulation. It's a problem of how you approach the regulations, how you see them, how you try to make the most of them.
Yeah, and if you look at Honda, you kind of look at, apart from the RC211V, because that was a great bike, you look at the change of regulations for 2007, they took a while to get used to the 800s. They couldn't.
Of course.
They weren't competitive. And then when they changed to the 1000s, you remember that 2012 season with Casey, they had all sorts of problems with the bike. They couldn't. It took them until Mark came along. But the bike wasn't perfect. And even in a lot of those years that Mark won the championship, the bike was never perfect. Yeah. And I think you're 100% right. But this is also a bit of a problem, because the longer that Honda and Yamaha don't get things right, is how long do they tough it out? How long do they go, okay, well, clearly we're not good enough anymore, we need to quit? Which is, it's kind of a disaster for the championship, like, to lose two big manufacturers because they're not willing to change their own way of thinking.
Hopefully they will react before that point, before reaching that point. But yeah, I mean, again, I don't know how much they're gonna last in the bottom of the, with four riders in the bottom of the standing. So yeah, hope they're gonna finally react in some way. At least they will try to do different things.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing at least Yamaha has on its side, and that's that they've got Fabio for a couple of more years, and a great credit has to go to Lynn Jarvis for that, who, of course, you spoke to Austin, and he told you that this will be his final year in MotoGP, which is a big shame. You know, Lynn's been a fantastic member of the paddock for so many years, but it seems like Lynn is very much trying to set that team up to have a good sort of, platform to work from, you know, beyond this year. You know, when they come into a transition period, he's making sure that some fundamental things are in place.
Yeah, he was a key member, I think, more from the executive side than from the technical side. But I would say that he, together with different people, he was able to change the mentality and to give Yamaha this winning mentality after so many years of being behind Honda by bringing Davide Brivio, who was a key member in order to convince Valentino to join the team, also with all the Valentino years, with Jorge Lorenzo years, now with Fabio, being able to convince Fabio to stay. So yeah, I think he's one of the most successful executives in the recent paddock, winning 8 titles, a lot of things, and full credit to him, because he's been a key figure in the Yamaha success during the last 15 years.
Yeah, 100%. And just finally, Yuri, we talk about him every week almost, but it's hard not to. Pedro Acosta, I mean, it comes into every race, and you there's always a sort of a thing in the back of your mind. You think, okay, when is he going to slow down a bit? When are the hard lessons going to start coming? And he just seems to be getting quicker and quicker.
I think I would look at this in the opposite way. I think there's a lot more to come from him.
Which is scary.
It's his third MotoGP race. So, and you speak with Ducati, and Ducati is absolutely sure, convinced that Pedro will give them hard times. They are absolutely convinced. I spoke with Davide Tardoce and he said, yeah, he's going to be there. He's going to give us a hell of a decade. Super excited to see what else this a young guy will be able to show us, because and not only the result, but the way he gets that result. I mean, everybody looking at him on track, everything is super fluent with him. He flows a lot in a difficult track like Austin, super physical, and he was able to put an outstanding performance. And yeah, I think that he doesn't make mistakes, and he's more on the bike than all the three, the Gas, of course, of Augusto, but also the two factory, the KTM factory riders. So I think now is the benchmark inside this, let's say, Pirelli Mobility Group, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, 100%. I mean, Austin's never been a great track for KTM, and both Miller, you know, Miller was quick for a little bit in the Grand Prix, but then you know, just slid down the order. Brad kind of had a tricky weekend. It's never been a great track for them, and yet Pedro just made it look like... It's almost as if Pedro's saying there is no problem with the bike. You know, if you know how to ride the bike, you can go and do it. And I think you're right. There is no real mistakes from him. He seems to just... He puts himself in these positions where he's around faster riders, more experienced guys, and he just learns. You know, he gets involved a little bit in the fights and maybe the sprints, but he sits and just observes. You know, he looks at what they're doing. How are they doing it? How are they managing the tires? How are they braking? How are they blah, 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 blah. And then he puts that into practice in the Grand Prix. And then it's almost as if the step is...
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Let's see what happens in Jerez, because in Jerez he can be really...
Give it, the thing I have in my mind about Jerez is that Brad Binder race from a few years ago, when his rookie race, when he ran off track but then made up all that time again and had pace to win the race. You have to think that Pedro will be so quick there, and you know, and KTM has got a great weekend on its hands with Danny Pedrosa there. We know how well he went last year at Jerez. It could be a really, really exciting weekend. And just to finish on Pedro, I mean, you mentioned him about having, you know, going to be having a good 10 years. He's going to be the superstar of this Liberty era. He's going to be the guy. I think he's going to be the Valentino, you know, in terms of driving in new fans to this championship.
I think he has everything. He has everything. He has the character. He has the, this kind of magic. he's super fast. He's funny. So, he has all the ingredients together. He's kind of a different guy, asking for riders to be original, not being all shaped in the same way. So, I think it's a kind of a different animal, what we have here.
What a great championship we've got this year. What a great season we've been having. Yuri, thank you very much for your company, as always.
Thank you.
And thank you to the listeners as well. You can find all of our other Tank Slappers podcasts on your various podcast platforms. And, of course, we've got lots and lots of content on autosport.com and motorsport.com to keep you entertained until the next round at Jerez next weekend. But for autosport.com and motorsport.com, this has been the Tank Slappers podcast, and we'll see you next time.